I am unashamed. What about you?
Well, it's interesting, Jace, because as of yesterday, our ministry lives have changed. I mean, you and Missy have been already doing worship at church. Trent, our guy who's been our lead pastor for the last few years and preacher is leaving, so I'm going to step back in, do a little preaching. I will be a Paul-like, feel-like preacher because I'm not charging the church any money, which is a lot of freedom for
that's
me.
That's the best place to be.
So we're all volunteers now.
As long as you can keep eating. Because well, I then, told them,
as long as we keep, you know, that's why we got to keep making some money.
Well, then
somewhere.
They can't fire you because they never really hired you. I like that.
Yeah. It's the Kramer, you know, Kramer on Seinfeld. He was working for a corporation, but they never hired him. So then they were like, they had to fire him. They said, well, you never really hired me. So I kind of like that.
Perfect situation.
Leave on your own.
Saturday, I got a text from a friend of ours, and they were like, there's a baby born at St. Francis, has cleft lip and palate. Mm. So, and Missy's out of town. She's visiting her grandmother, and Mia has an appointment, which is every 6 weeks, you know, of her life. She meets with the doctors today. So she's out of town. So I was like, I didn't even text Missy because I thought, I know what she's going to say. She's like, you're up, babe. So I went up there, and, you know, it's weird when you don't know the people because you have no idea. I mean, I had the room number, but, and so when I finally got in there with security at our local hospital,
yeah,
it was amazing.
Why? Because about 2 years ago, some fool went up there and kidnapped a baby.
Oh yeah.
Ever since then, I mean, it's like lot, which is probably good, but it is a pain to get in it now. If you
I walked in there.
Do you have your license and all that?
I don't have my license. I don't have a wallet. Look, there's a line here, and I'm looking around like. First of all, I tried to get in the side entrance because I know that a hospital like the back of my hand. Like, no, you can't enter here. So I walk in, and I see people getting their IDs. It was like kind of like an airport kind of thing. And I was like, just to get in the hospital.
And then so just to say without, you know, just slamming anybody, but, I mean, the guys that they've hired, the security guy, this isn't SWAT level.
Oh, no.
I mean, what I'm saying is these guys are moving like molasses in the winter.
There was construction all around the hospital. I parked. I kid you not, almost a mile away. And so I'm like, I'm not even sure I have my wallet in my truck anyway. So I tried to go the Duck Dynasty. When I stepped up, I said, has anybody ever seen Duck Dynasty? And this African-American girl, she said, oh, yeah, I love that show. You know, I said, this is my ID. This is all I got. And she's like, no, which just, one are you?
You just owned it. You're just like,
well,
hey,
I mean, because I don't have my ID because the guy in front of me, he didn't have his ID. And they said, good luck. Have a nice day. So I thought, gulp. And so she
said, you were just short of going Ron Burgundy and said, hey, I'm kind of a big deal. You know, I mean, just, come on.
I mean, I wasn't thinking that. I was just thinking, I don't have my wallet. I don't have my ID. I'm trying to do something good.
I bet Ricky, the security guy, was really loving
your
stick.
Well, I pulled
a
K. I said, look, I'm up here. I'm trying to visit a family that just had a baby that has a condition. I'm trying to encourage them. And I don't have my ID. And she said, you're Jace, huh? I said, yep, all right, you have seen the show. And you have to have a name tag.
Oh, yeah.
So she wrote it, and she misspelled my name.
Oh, so it was a woman that was processing.
Well, no, but she was the only one that recognized me. And so, look, so I was fixed to say my name is, and he said, no, she has to come up with it. And I thought, well, this has gotten weird. And so I'm
so
like,
now you're having this little test of
it's
knowledge.
A test, because that guy, he didn't watch Duck Dynasty and he didn't care. And then she misspelled my name, but I'm like, do I correct that? Or
But she put JAC.
JAC.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
You know what? I'm keeping my mouth shut. And look, they still didn't trust me. He turned around to another guy.
Did you have face paint on like you do today? I mean,
I look exactly like I look right now.
You look like the guy in the commercial that wears the mask all the time. That's the inner thief guy.
So I go up to the hospital room once I made it through all that. And
I can't believe they let you.
I walk in, and this little baby, beautiful little girl, but she had, when I saw her, I mean, she looked a lot like when Mia was born, but a little worse, I guess. And she was a bilateral cleft lip and palate, which was both sides.
Yep.
And the couple, the mom was sitting up in the bed, and the dad had a Saints jersey on, which I thought, okay. And they both had smiles on their faces, and one of their friends was holding their daughter, which I was kind of surprised because looking at her condition, I was like, I can't believe she's not hooked up to something because she looked like this is going to be a tough road. And so I started telling them who I was, and they were, oh, yeah, we know, and thanks for coming up here. But they were as happy and as positive and as pleasant about, and their baby had been born 24 hours. And they had a team. They were going to go to the Shriners Hospital, and they had done the research, and they were prepared. And every time I said, well, this is going to be a tough road, but it's okay, they would come back with, we're just, glad that God, blessed us with that she has no other conditions. And, I mean, it was just, everything was positive. Yeah, we know. But they said there was one, which is unusual with a baby that was born with this severe cleft lip and palate, there was one little bitty strip on the middle of the roof of her mouth, which doesn't seem that significant, but that one little strip allowed her to eat without a fake, like Mia, we had to make a, mold. Yeah, right. First, we just had to cram the food down there with a syringe, which was awful. But She was able to eat on her own with just that one little strip. Hmm. And the mom's like, we're just so thankful for that one little strip.
Wow.
So deal. I didn't really want to go up there. I was nervous about it because I hadn't met them. And then when I got up there, I was way more encouraged by their faith and their outlook on this. And so get this. I get to the end of the conversation.
Did they know who you were?
They knew who I was, but they didn't mention this till the end. They said, well, we met with Missy. And I was like, oh, you met with my wife? Well, I was thinking, well, she's out of town. She's like, no, she heard we had done an ultrasound, and somehow another, we knew that she had some form of a cleft lip and palate, and your wife came and saw us. And I didn't even know she had done that. So so then I called Missy. I was like, hey, remember that time that couple, But she's like, babe, I see a lot of couples. But I thought that was really good that both of us.
Yeah. You were ministering to this family and neither one of us knew it. Yeah, that's awesome.
And so she's like, oh, they're really prepared. But I'm so glad you did that. She was, it made Missy feel good.
What's amazing is, Jace, is that because I remember when Missy had the first ultrasound where she saw Mia, Lisa just happened to be with her that day, not knowing. She just went with her. And I just remember how hard that day is, because that is even harder in a sense, because then what you're facing, and that's.
Yeah, you never want to hear uh-oh in an ultrasound, right. Which is basically, what we heard. But I only tell you that just to say that I think when God gives you issues and challenges and problems, the best thing you can do is eventually turn that around. From, poor as me to, the.
Why did this happen to me?
Yeah, we went through 3 months of that, and then we said, okay, why not? What are we going to do about it? And we took that from John 9 instead of asking, why.
Yep.
We were like, well, what are we going to do about it to glorify God? But the best thing you can do is eventually turn that around and help other people.
Right.
And just me being there saying, here's my email if you have any questions, because you're going to have them. Because most people don't realize this is something that's not correctable. It's managed, especially with a condition as severe as she had. So for the next 18 years of her life, number one, she's going to have a doctor's visit every 6 weeks. She'll have numerous surgeries. And it's little stuff like, what do you do when your you know, kids out of school for 3 months. You know, you know, just finding creative ways to pass the time. And
well, plus the, like you said, the eating. I just remember through the years there have been different struggles about that, just because of the way it is in her mouth, and me, I'm talking about. So I mean, that's we, you we guys have dealt with that. A lot of stuff. So we've got our good friends at Black Rifle Coffee Company, which is a new company. You see, it has 2014. Yeah. But these guys make some really good coffee.
I no mean, doubt.
We love it, you know.
I would not say it was if it wasn't. I mean, I feel kind of like a weapon when I drink it, which I guess
I've got
is the
one
connection.
Of these coffee makers. I go five dips. They're kind of mounded up. One, two, three, four, five. Right. Over in there, it fills up the tray that holds your coffee right. grounds. Put you the dang of water in it, not quite a full a canister of water.
Let well, it I can save it. You some time here. Don't do the five. Just take the bag.
You want to talk about Black Rifle? This is black.
Well, I do the same thing, but look, I just dump the bag as yeah. far as possible.
Yeah,
it yeah. makes it work. So anyway, this company, we love them. They're veteran owned. They make this premium small batch coffee. I even like their languaging, because where somebody else would talk about, you know, they call theirs coffee rounds, like the little cups, you know, where you people do the
really?
Where
yeah,
they put
clever.
Yeah, coffee rounds. Yeah. So everything is about weaponry and, you know, yeah. taking out terrorists. Yeah. It's like the names of them. We found out last time what murdered out, which is one we really like, what that meant. You know, Willie had to explain that to us. So anyway, we love these guys. So they call it Freedom Field Coffee. So you want to join up, go to their website. It's Black Rifle Coffee Club. That way you get it like we do. It just comes every month. So wake up to America's coffee, blackriflecoffee.com/fill. So you want to use that /fill. That way you're going to be able to get a discount of 20% off on your first order of anything, sweet. Including the club. So it's a good deal. They're great guys. We love their messaging. And, I mean, they know what they're talking about, and they make good coffee.
Great coffee.
Check it out. BlackRifleCoffee.com/fill. Check them out. So tell the audience, just because there's a lot of people that have followed me, a story in the family for years, and we've been off the air for so long now, kind of where she's at, yeah. how old she is, what she, you know, how
well,
she's
16 now. She's had at least 10 or 11 major surgeries and a lot of other procedures. And it's something that she just had a surgery on her ears, believe it or not, because, you know, your ear, nose, and throat are all connected. And that was kind of a crazy thing. One of her ears started bleeding. And first, you know, you think it's an ear infection. And after a while, it was something that came from her condition, you know. So they had to go in there and do surgery on that. But she only has one major surgery left that we know of, because when they stop growing, that's when they pretty much go with everything.
The last setup, right?
Yeah.
Basically.
And they may have to move her jaw once again, which is pretty much the roughest part of all this. And the problem is because when you grow, since it wasn't formed exactly, you know, where it could grow right. properly, that every time you start growing, other pieces of your body are outrunning the parts that was originally had the scar, you know, the scar tissue. It just doesn't grow right, is my point. So anything that affects your breathing, your talking, or your eating, they go in there and say, we need to correct this. But she's doing really good. I mean, now she's the last surgery she had, they were going to give her the, you know, goofy juice or whatever. And we have a new, the doctor that we had, that lead doctor, she has a few doctors on her team, but we have a new one. And when he came in there, he said, "Are you nervous?" And she went, "No." And he said, "Oh boy, you're a pro at this." And she's like, "Just do what you got to do." And so then they were like, "Well, we'll give you this goofy juice so you can, you know, that stuff works instantly. It's, I don't know what's in there, but in 7 or 8 seconds, she's like, woo." But she's like, "No," she said, I want to save that for the end. I like, I guess she got that from you, you know. She's like, "Just right before you put me under, give it to me. I don't like how it makes me feel," you know. But most kids want it because they don't want to be nervous rolling away from their parents.
Right, they're scared.
She's like, "Look, I'm good. Do what you got to do. Just have it ready there right before y'all started.
Well, I just remember all the years, because you think about it, it's a whole, her whole life, like you said. I mean, us being going to some, those major surgeries, and of course she was so tiny at first, and it was just so hard to, for me, for us to, like, you know, watch her wheel away. It's this little, you know, your little child here. And then just, but watching her response to it through the years, like you said, to me, it's been a huge encouragement to even our family and me personally, because I'm like, this is a superwoman here. You know what I'm saying? Like, she just goes in there and it's like, yeah, we're just going to have all this crap done in your, you know.
Now, I don't even notice that she's had any work done.
Nah, it's amazing.
I mean, she sings, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing.
She's up there playing the piano at the Christmas Eve service. She was awesome.
What can happen? You know, we help through our charity with the Mia Moo. Miamu.org, if you want to look into it.
Yeah, that's
We had one kid, he's had 200 surgeries.
Oh my goodness.
Woo. He's about 17. And one of the most positive, fun people I've ever been around in my life. I mean, it's amazing the character, because they mature more because of all the suffering, which comes back to Romans 5, which is kind of our theme verse for our charity, you know, that suffering produces perseverance and perseverance character, and character hope. And so it's really encouraging. I mean, look, it's a rough journey that you have to go through, and it's an expensive journey, but you know, when you, every once in a while you meet people like that, I'm telling you, there was not a doubt in my mind. They just were bulldogs about it. And I just sense no anxiety whatsoever. It was really encouraging.
Well, I love that.
I wanted to share that.
I love that what you and Missy do with Mia Moo, because like you said, I mean, we had the blessing of the show came along, and so you guys were able to not have to worry about how expensive it is and everything you have to set up. Because even with good insurance or whatever, there's a lot of money involved. You're talking about all these surgeries, and we know healthcare.
Yeah,
and
we don't really pay anything. We just give them a little hope, because that money's going into a black hole. Even if, and people say, well, don't they have insurance? But you don't understand. If you just think every 6 weeks you have some sort of procedure, no matter how much, you can have all the insurance in the world. At some point, this is fixed to get expensive.
Exactly.
Just even traveling and eating out. And,
and plus you want the best, you know. So if you don't have any money, it's tough. So you guys help the gap with other families, which is amazing. I mean, y'all have helped a lot of families.
We just try to network them. I mean, like this couple, they're not part of our charity or what. And Missy tried to kind of get them involved, and they're like, we're good. But even said that when the baby's born, because you never know the severity of it till they're born, I felt like, because I've also gone to hospital rooms when I walked in, everybody was crying. I mean, it was just devastating. So those, you seem like you have a little more impact. And the first time I ever did one, I was nervous about going in there. When I walked in, and there was, I would say, 30 people in the waiting room, and they had their son who had just been born. He was hooked up to wires, and he looked really rough. And they all looked at me. And it was just kind of a moment here, and I was like, all right, look, y'all don't know who I am, but I have a daughter. She was born and looked a lot like your son. And all I'm going to say is it's going to be okay. And I had some pictures, you know. Well, after I said that, within, I would say, 5 minutes, everybody was talking. They were asking questions. Mm-hmm. The whole mood changed, you know, and it's kind of like they needed that just to process and move on.
Right, you know? Which is important, you know.
Yep.
We had similar with Anna was born premature, and I remember we were so young, you know, I said we were too stupid to be scared, but we just had full faith that she'd be fine, and she was. I mean, she survived. She had surgery. She weighed less than 2 pounds, and now she's had 3 of my grandkids that were all 10-pound whoppers.
She gave me my great-grandchildren.
That's exactly
right.
And
you put your wedding ring all the way up her arm to her shoulder.
Yeah, actually, it was not mine, which is a 10. It was Lisa's. It was a 7, which, you know, even smaller.
Just think about that.
A size 7 ring went up on her shoulder. That's how tiny. She looked like a little skint squirrel. You could hold her just like this, you know, which was incredible. But
you know what just hit me when
she
said
one of the most little hardworking women I've ever seen.
Oh,
in my
she's
life.
Something now.
How old is now?
She is 33. She'll be 34 in a couple of months. But she's worked for Duck Commander since she was about 15. You know, she loved it, and she still does. And she takes care of mom.
You could have never told that she was like that when she was born.
But you know, even to this day, you can tell when she wears a swimsuit, because you know she was so tiny. you imagine she's this big. Well, they had to operate on her. So they'd go in there and tie off, you know, a duct in her heart. Well, the doctor, who was Iranian, he had only been here a little while. He was the personal physician of the Shah of Iran. So he got out. You remember all the trouble we had with Iran back at around 80? He got out of that and winds up in Monroe, and he's a specialist on hearts. That's and especially crazy. Pediatric. I mean, it was just like he landed right where we needed. Yeah. So he tells me that what he's going to tie off, you know, I'm 20 years old, is the size of a cat hair. One, if you went in and plucked a hair out of a cat, that was the size of what he was working on.
Woo.
So that's incredible. So they cut her. They lifted it up. They didn't want to have to crack her little rib cage. So they cut her all the way around from stern all the way around, and they just lifted it up. And then he goes in there, ties that off, and then sews her back up. So, but she's as she grew as a little girl and then a woman, the scar was always there. It still is, but it's halfway around her body. So at the time it was happened, the scar was that big. Of course, now she's a grown woman, so it goes all the way around. So she wears a swimsuit. I can always, you know, she wears, you can see it, and it's like, it's that reminder of, you know, what happened when she was, you know, a few weeks old, which is incredible. I mean, you know,
she lived to tell about it.
She did.
It's amazing.
And is really healthy. I mean, she had
I was telling that story about that the first time I did that. Well, that, here we are 15 years later, I guess. And that son and his mom, they spoke at our last charity that we did in October. Yeah, he got up and spoke. It was short, sweet, and to the point, but it was awesome. And the mom was crying, and she got down, because we're trying to raise money at that thing. She's like, "I'm so sorry I cried." I was like, "Oh, no, that was awesome." I said, if that didn't loosen the wallet.
That's right.
But it's more just them being so positive. I mean, you go through all these surgeries, and here she is, you know, having to do it as a single parent.
Yeah.
I mean, that's rough.
You know, for years we did, Lisa and I did just what you and Missy are doing. We haven't done it in several years now. Obviously, that was, we're down 30-something years ago. But the first 10 years, they would call us, and when somebody would have a baby in the NICU, and we would go up and talk to them just like you did, just to say, hey, you know, you can get through this. You can make it.
Yeah, it's important.
You know?
I think it is. And most of the medical personnel at the hospitals, they're unfamiliar with this condition. I mean, they have a little sheet that's handed out, but all kids are different and all conditions are different. So I told them that yesterday, and they said, "Yeah." They started reading off that sheet, and we were kind of shaking our head. I was like, "Well, good for you," you know, because they don't really know. And so, you know, they thought it wasn't going to be real bad, but that's. Most people would have just said, "Oh, it'll be okay," but these parents didn't do that. They prepared for the worst.
Well, plus, you know, when you're around healthcare professionals, like you said before, Dad, you're right. They view your body. They learned it like they're a mechanic working on a car. You know, so grab me a wrench and let me go and pull this. Yeah. We look at it like that's our kid or that's our dad. So everybody's like, but they're grabbing, you know. So with Nan, she would just turn blue, you know, because she would quit breathing. They just thump her on the foot, you know, "All right, wake up, you know, Nanner." Oh. And we would just, you know, we're freaking out. It's your kid, you know, that's, you know.
Oh, the first procedure that we had, 11 days, she was 11 days old, and they went in there and they said, "We got to make a temporary mold. For a temporary palate, and we gotta put this packing in her mouth and make a mold." So I was like, "Okay." Oh, they just grabbed it and started shoving it in her mouth. She's 11 days old. There was a rage that came over me, and I was started visualizing hitting the guy between that, because it was an older fella, and it was like he just couldn't get it in there, you know. And Missy looked at me and she said, "You need to get out of here." Because I was just like,
You were fixing to hit that guy.
I was fixing to hit him right between the eyes. And so I walked out and I took a couple deep breaths and I thought, "Don't hurt anybody." And I walked back in and he said, he was pulling it out and he's like, "Man, that didn't take. I got to do it again." And I was like, "I'm out of here." But it was like what you said. I mean, I felt like he wasn't being gentle enough.
Right.
And
but
I mean, he's trying to do a job, and she's choking. And I mean, I just lost it. It was probably the most violent I've ever felt. And then I was like, "What? My whole world has changed here."
That'd have been bad if you just slugged the doctor right off the bat. So let us on Unashamed Podcast be the first to wish happy new hair to all you guys who discovered Keeps. We've been talking about it quite a bit on the podcast. So, happy new hair. That's what we're saying, Dace. We're just so excited about people that have people that have kept their hair. By the way, 66% of men who have used Keeps have grown hair. So two-thirds of them.
I thought about Keeps the other day. I was frying fish, and I looked down, and there was a hair after I had fried the fish. And I saw it, and I went, man. You know, because you don't like seeing a hair in your food.
Not at
all.
But
then I thought, but at least I have hair to get on the food. You see what I'm?
Yeah.
I still don't want hair on my fish.
Well, even look,
I guess that
wasn't my point.
I'll wear one of these. You can wear one of those top hats like you got. I wear some type of head gear.
Well, I did too, but I had one escape. Which is the whole reason for this product.
That's right. So so you'll have more hair in your food, but you'll have hair. So that's a good point.
We don't
point.
Like
that's...
hair in the food, but if it's your hair, why does that not offend you?
I don't know. You're right.
Not really a big deal.
It doesn't matter.
But if your hair's in my food, I don't like it.
Yeah.
But if your hair's in your food, you say, no problem.
You just toss it aside and eat your food. Yeah. So we agree losing hair stinks. We don't want to do that. So here's what you do. Keeps.com/door. You go there. They're basically going to give you their generic versions because there's some hormones that you take. There's a medical connection that you have to make as well. So we want you to sign up. Have a happy new hair. That's my deal, you know. Go to keeps.com/door. You get your first order Keeps for 50% off. That's half off just by going and checking it out. So keeps.com/door. Keep your hair. And you'll have an occasional hair in the food, but that's all right.
Yeah.
You'll have hair.
Wouldn't it be happy new hairs? Is that the plural? Or is it just...
Well, you wouldn't say happy new years. It works for me. So, happy new hair.
Yeah, you got to work on this, though.
Well, so we've made it to the Book of John. And I guess, as what we've been talking about as the lead-in, it's, you know, the whole book is an eyewitness account about Jesus, about what he means. And you mentioned John 9 a minute ago, which we'll get there eventually. What I love about the idea, and you were describing the guy, is there is something powerful about somebody telling you an experience, you know, mm-hmm. like the guy, I mean, the kid and his mom. I mean, that's something you could tell their story, but them talking about it is even more powerful. So we get to John, and right off the bat, what I love about the way he starts is he's saying, look, because all the other gospels kind of give you the whole narrative, but he just starts with the idea that I witnessed the Son of God.
That's right.
I mean, here's my tale of the Son of God. And he, like you said last week at the end, he says, look, I'm only going to give you a fraction of what I saw in this guy.
And you know what's filled in the book of John are all these stories about where Jesus, I think about in John 5, where he came up there and it said, you know, where the lame and paralyzed and the blind had gathered, you know, and they were going down in the pool because they felt it had some kind of supernatural powers, and Jesus eventually heals that guy. But, you know, the reason, like, Saturday, I did not feel like going up there. I mean, that's a lot. We had been duck hunting. You know, I was tired, by myself. Busy wasn't there. I got home, and I thought, you know what? Jesus would go down there and say, hey, you know.
Yeah.
So you do these kind of Jesus things because you get to the fifth chapter and you're like, well, that's the kind of people he was noticing. And so if you're going to take your faith seriously, one thing you get real clear about the God of the Bible in Jesus form, he genuinely cared about the condition of people, spiritually and physically.
You know, pretty interesting. Probably, what do you think, Al, from the time the apostles, the disciples, including John, were chosen, they didn't have but about a lot of things happening.
Yeah.
Things were moving quickly. You know, all the crowd, the feeding this and walking on the water, all those things they witnessed and they saw. But probably, what do you think, 3 years, a period that John was actually able to walk with him.
That's right.
Well, when you get over to 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, John coming out with the first paragraph, like it's hard for him to explain what kind of being was that. Well, he writes down in 1 John 5, he said, I write these things to you who believe in the name of the Son of God so that you may know that you have eternal life. Now, he had heard Jesus say that, you know, John 3, you know, born again, and then for God so loved the world, essentially, so you'll know if you have eternal life if you believe in him. So John, having witnessed and watched, think about it, the miracles and all, just imagine what kind of man John was from just running with Jesus for 3 years.
Well, think about it, up until the point.
You can see it come out in 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, really more than John the Gospel.
We're assuming, we don't know this, but we assume they were all younger than Jesus was. He's about 30. So, you know, we're talking about 20-something-year-old men.
Yeah.
Some have said they thought they were even younger. And remember, these guys are fishermen. He and his brother, Peter and his brother. I mean, that was their primary.
Look, we were commercial fishermen.
So we know.
Look, just think about, I think.
We know the routine.
Well, and think about, remember the other commercial fishermen on the river at the same time as us?
That we were.
Remember those guys?
Yeah.
I mean, these guys. Number one, you could smell them literally a mile away.
You'd see the boat coming. It's like,
Jace was a little bit hesitant to know that we were in the commercial fishing business. When he saw others who had been there and been done it longer than us, he like, is that where we're going to end up?
And they weren't very old.
Who knows,
they weren't very old, but they all looked way old just from that river. Yeah.
You know what changed my perspective? Because I used to like fishing, even though the money wasn't very good and you stunk. But, you know, one day we were talking to one of the local commercial fishermen here. You'll know who he was when I tell you this, because you'll remember this. But he just wasn't that good at it, you know. And so if you're not good a commercial fisherman,
you're gonna be hungry.
Yeah, you don't make any money because there's very little money in it.
Yeah.
And I remember him one day. He said, you know, he had an idea that he was gonna donate parts of his body to the military for research.
And he knew how much money you could get. He started with fingers, hands, arms, and then legs. He was saying,
"Well, and then he got into what
he could do without." And I'm like, "Man,
that was his retirement plan."
Yeah. Well, look, you're laughing, and I laughed at first because I thought
it's sad. I know I shouldn't be laughing.
I thought he was kidding, and then I'm like, "This dude is serious." Because he started, I forget which organs, but he was like, man, that thing gets you $25,000.
Yeah,
you
know? A good active kidney.
Well, dude, there's a reason, you know, God gave you two of them. And he's like, that's what I was thinking. I said, no, that's not what I was thinking. He was thinking I had.
And how much liver do I need to actually, you know, keep managing?
But he was like, but I'm helping people, you know? And I was like, well. Yeah.
my point was I was just giving a little update. I write these things to you so you'll know you have eternal life, having run with Jesus 3 years. He was convinced. But if you think about it logically, and we talk about the people like Mia, the ones that are born, and Nan with a heart trouble and 2 pounds. And you said, well, why would you spend the time, the money, and the routine of it all? Because they have a chance at immortality, eternity. So when it comes to physical ailments, the reason you look after people and you help people that are sick and downtrodden and the ones that are really ill and the born with defects, you say you reach out to them because they're on the earth. They are human beings.
Yeah.
And eternity can be theirs.
Well,
when you look at it like that, you're very careful on what you do to children and people who are sick. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. And I think we can relate because we, like you said, we grew up commercial fishing. I think that's why we relate so much to the biblical guys that we read about.
It's kind of interesting that that's what we are.
I mean, when Jesus came up there and said, you know, drop your nets and I'll make you fishers of men. I mean, they're like, okay.
Let's go.
If there's a way out of this. I mean, because commercial fishing is much fun as we had doing it. That's a hard way to make a dollar. It's unpredictable.
It's rough.
Your hands.
But we laughed because we realized, and this happened 2 different times with Jesus and his initial disciples, is that the way he impressed them was almost a miraculous catch a fish. I mean, a boat full of fish. That's how Peter first came in, remember?
Yep.
And they were like, Lord, you know, you're a great rabbi. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, but, you know, we know what we're doing here. And he says, yeah, we'll put it out over there. And they do it. All of a sudden, if you want to impress commercial fishermen, fill up the fish. Fill up the boat with fish.
Well, he caught 153, right. But Phil and I know took note when it said, and not a mesh was broken.
Yeah. Not a mesh was broken. I said, it's hard to do that.
Look, as much time as you fish, you spend the other time mending the net.
I have so many visual memories of Dad, because he was a lot better than we were at it. But just nets being strung out all through the woods out here where we're sitting. Yep. And he'd just be out. You'd spend a whole day.
Oh, yeah.
Mending nets.
Well, you'd dry them and mend them.
Many days.
And I'll tell you another thing. It was so tempting sometimes when you're frustrated, especially when you had a trammel net. And you're, instead of untangling it, you're just like, man, I could just break those two. I could just pop those two right there and just slip him right out. It was so tempting because you were just like.
But you knew, then you got to go
well,
back.
Well, if, you know, if Phil got wind of that, that's a butt whooping. You know?
So, but here's the point that I think is amazing. So we've established, obviously, John, how would he know? He's a fisherman and he hadn't been, you know, he spent the 3 years with Jesus. And the opening line of his book is, in the beginning was the Word. Capital Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. He just went all the way back to Genesis 1.
Yep.
And linked it together that this is the guy. Because, you know, as you get into the whole first chapter, you realize he's talking about Jesus when he gets down to verse 14. This is a guy who's a commercial fisherman. And as far as we know, I mean, it wasn't like they were all Jewish rabbis or had, you know, great theology about the Old Testament.
No.
And yet just from his witness, that's how he starts his book. I mean, I'm impressed by that. I mean, amazing. That's like.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. A lot of people, they start reading that and they're like, what does it mean? Because it's Word and it's capitalized. And if you look at the Greek word that's translated into English, it's logos, you know, the logic of God. Or the, you know, when you think, why did they translate a word? It's like the communication of God. Because here's this being that can make humans from dust, make universes and stars and, you know, a woman from a rib. Well, you're going to have a hard time relating to that. So the communication aspect of God is the Word that became flesh, because you get to 14, which we always read John 1:1, then we'll skip down when we're sharing Jesus individually with people, because they're confused by that. They're
what does that mean?
In the beginning was the Word. Now, sometimes I'll go to the beginning in Genesis 1 where it says the earth was formless and dark, and it says the Holy Spirit was hovering over the waters. So you have that, and then you have in God. But then it says, and God said. So if you put those three personalities there, the Holy Spirit over the waters, God is the creator, and then he said, which I believe is the Word of God,
the spoken
Jesus,
word, that's right.
Yeah, that hadn't become flesh yet, which is why he later on in verse, 26 of Genesis 1, where he said, and God said, let us make man in our
image,
which is a confusing passage if you're not really looking at the different personalities of
God. In verse 3 backs up just what you just said. Through him, this Word, all things were made. That's everything. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. And people still have a hard time figuring that out
to this day.
You know, it's difficult, and I get it. I mean, it's a heavy topic.
Well,
you know?
you see the ripples of that statement, like in some of the letters. Like if you read Colossians 1, he basically says this. Paul is trying to have his take on John 1:1. You know, in 15 he says Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. You know, resurrection in mind there. For by him all things were created. Same phrase. For by him all things were created.
Right.
Things in heaven and earth. This is cool. Visible and invisible. Whether thrones, power, rulers, authority. All things were created by him and for him. Then he, just to make it more mind-blowing. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together.
Now we're talking molecules, atoms.
Atoms and molecules.
I mean, everything that you can't see. Just think about how the world has to work.
Plus,
with
how
the
would the Apostle,
you know,
Paul have known about invisible things if they didn't have a microscope at the time?
That's a good point.
Well, when you start looking
at, you know, you're talking about invisible things, you're like,
No, the microscope came
he
a long way.
Like, visible and invisible. You say invisible.
But you know what, too? As time goes by and the more science advances, the more Jesus and that statement seems more plausible. Because, you know, when they discovered DNA, all of a sudden, they have come up with a code in our bodies that is more sophisticated than any other code they've ever discovered. And it's in our human body.
Yep.
And so all of a sudden, they're like, oh, look at what we found. But then all the people who are familiar with Colossians 1:17 say, well, who wrote that code? I mean, all of a sudden,
yeah.
Now we're seeing why things hold together. There had to be some kind of intelligence to come up with the most complex code.
The discovery of DNA has really, it helped a lot of people do some serious thinking about God.
Right.
But not just DNA. Look, think
rightfully
about
so.
When,
the more
he
we
said,
look.
When he said in John 1:4, he said, in him was life, and that life was the light of men. Now, he was speaking of spiritually. But, you know, some of these scientific studies have determined that when you start breaking down the atoms and the molecules, there's all these little minute particles of light that are in our body. And they're looking at that. If you read their studies, of course, they're not coming at it from a Jesus, you know, God creator standpoint. But, they're using words like mysteries and strange, you know, that all these particles of light, these microscopic things, are actually holding us together. And I'm thinking, that sounds a lot like Colossians 1:17.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Hebrew writer, he put it like this. He said in Hebrews 1:2, in these last days, he had just said that God spoke through the prophet. He's spoken to us by his son, the one who the Apostle John was writing about, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom he made the universe, is what John said too. Now, the Hebrew writer, we don't know who wrote that. The Son is the radiance of God's glory. He's the exact representation of his being. And listen to this, sustaining all things by his powerful word. So that comes up again in Hebrews 1. After he had provided purification for sins, his death on a cross, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven, which means the only way you could come from a tomb and end up back where you came from, there would have had to have been a resurrection in there somewhere.
Yep.
So he became as much superior to the angels as the name he has inherited is superior to theirs. The question ought to be in everybody's mind, how did these different individuals 2,000 years ago dream up this story? I mean,
well, it's impossible. It's impossible. I want to say this. Look, because I want our readers
or
to
tell
follow
a big
this.
Lie. And I'm like, what?
I want our readers to follow this as we go through John, not just John, the entire Bible, but specifically in John, you'll see three things, because we started talking about DNA and, you know, us being made of particles of light. But what I noticed is my perspective changed. And my faith was enhanced once I started looking at God's DNA. And you'll find three concepts specifically in John that keep coming up. Light, because he doesn't like turn on the light. It refers to him as he is the light.
Yep.
Life, same thing. He didn't become life. He just became flesh. He is life.
Right.
That's why when he died, I've said many times, he couldn't stay dead. And you say, why? Because he is life.
Yep.
Can't die.
Yep.
That's why he came back. And the other is love. And although it doesn't specifically use the word as much as light and life in the book of John, it does. You remember John 15, mm-hmm. where he's like, true love is, you know, laying down his life for his friends, and that's what you are. But his love is more shown. And that's why we brought up the man born blind, mm-hmm. the cripple at the well, the Samaritan woman had been married seven times. And really, when you think about what love is, if it's not acted upon in the way you live your life every day, I mean, let's face it, Jesus got up every day and he declared and showed his love. And ultimately, he did it on a cross, which is where we're getting. But if you want a Sunday morning sermon, you, God's DNA, and you just think, if you're going to be a God or be a hero, or we're going to put your faith in it, those three qualities, that's what makes a God.
Yep.
If you're light and your life and your love, you pretty much got everything covered.
And you never make a mistake in any of the three.
That's right.
And well, that, and look at the opposite. You're never lost. You're never in darkness where you don't know, you know, where your way is. There's no death and everything that goes along with that. And then you always have a way to respond in every situation, no matter what. Well, that pretty well covers it. And so that's who God is.
So
and
we you'll notice that. Yeah. So we aspire to live that way. The closer you can live those three principles, the more you're like Christ, which is what Paul said. Follow me as I follow the example of Christ.
I had a guy, you know, Al, and I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to embarrass him, but we were going to teach a class in the book of John, and he's like, let's work on an outline. You know, I was like, okay. I was like, well, you work on one, I'll work on one, and then we'll get together. Well, when we got together, and this guy's a real deep thinker, his was like 21 pages. He had every chapter, all the verses. You know, I had one sentence, which is God's DNA is life, light, and love. I was like, that's the outline. And he was like, well, I have 21 pages. I said, well, let's meet somewhere in the middle, a little toward my end. Because my point was, no matter what chapter we're in or what verse we're reading, it's going to come back to those principles in your life. Those are your three answers to whatever problem you have.
Yeah.
That's why we put our faith and trust in there. But you'll notice that as we read, you'll see those three principles in every story that we read.
And Jay, you just gave our audience a little homiletical lesson without even, you know, saying you were teaching it.
Most people don't know what homiletics
is. That's right.
So you need to explain that. But it's, it's how you go about presenting a message. It's, I don't know
that's
why
that's what
it's
the word means.
Homiletics.
You know, and some different groups have their sermons are called homilies, which is out of that Greek word from homiletics. It's basically just a sermon or how you do it. But Jace just did it beautifully because that's what you do. You have the Bible seems so big, but the concepts are not that big. It's just repeating those concepts over and over
again. That's why there's so much argumentation, if I can use a big word for me,
that's in the
religious world, because they get so focused on the trees, and I mean that by the verses.
Yep.
Going verse by verse, one by one, they miss big picture concepts.
That's right.
You know, just think about it. If you have an argument about a verse that really doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things, and you get mad and you go your separate ways because I can't believe they believe that. Well, you violated pretty much those principles of light, life, and love one altercation. You know, I remember I had a huge argument with a fellow. We completely disagreed on a concept and a verse. And I read a verse. I said, well, here's a verse I want to read. And I read the verse, greet one another with a holy kiss. And he said, what's that got to do with anything? I said, do you do that every Sunday? Do you greet? It's pretty clear. That's what it says, isn't it? He's like, well, that's what it says. He said, well, I don't do that. I was like, now I could make a big deal on this because here's a verse that you obviously are not participating in. And I know you don't like this verse because if I greeted your wife with a holy kiss next Sunday, you'd be mad about it. And I'd go to this verse and say, I'm trying to live this verse out. And my point was, if you just take a verse out and try to apply it,
and then make it your
And without missing the whole point of what we're doing, that's kind of garbage you get into.
That's why context is important. I fly over to Romania, and guess how they greeted each other every time we got together? With a holy kiss. Super weird for beard stubble of another man on your face made me feel very uncomfortable. And yet that's their context.
Yeah.
For us, it's a handshake or, you know,
the key word there is holy, you know.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Holy has nothing to do with the peck on the cheek.
That's right.
Or, you know, even,
it's the appreciation of the brother.
Well, and it's you don't have any kind of sinful,
right?
You know, but us in our culture, we don't do that because most people, it's like me, I don't want somebody kissing on me.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm kind of glad our culture said, nah.
I take a rain check on that. Got a lip fungus they ain't quite identified.
I have germaphobe tendencies. And you get into all that, you know.
Get over in Europe, you know, or something, both sides.
Yeah, that's what they were doing.
But a new Christian, I could see it in our church because we're, you know, I say this affectionately, we got a lot of rednecks. And some of them, if you go kiss a guy, he's wanting to fight. And if you kiss his wife, you are going to fight.
Oh, yeah. That's
fight. It.
Yeah.
He's like, what are you
There's doing? Nothing holy about that for the redneck.
I was greeting him with a holy kiss. Yeah, well, beat me outside, and I'm going to greet you.
With the right hand of fellowship. That's right.
An AR-15.
All right, so somehow we steered there from our study. Next time we get together, we're going to talk. The next guy up is John the Baptist, which is very fascinating in how John the Apostle talks about John the Baptist. So you got an assignment now. We're asking you to read along with us in John. Now, Jace is just giving us something else to think about. That's what I'm going to do this week because I'm preaching John this week, is look for light, life, and love as you're reading through. It's a good thing to take some notes on, probably enhance your study, which I think.
And I want to hit this John 1:12 about God giving us the right to become children of God. Because that same spirit that hovered over the waters at the first creation, I believe, is still hovering this day, ready to make new creations through Jesus.
You know, John the Apostle went from John the Gospel, when he got over there explaining what he had seen, probably 20, 30 years later when he wrote 1st, 2nd, 3rd John. He said, if you love your brother and you do what's right and love your brother, you've been born of God. You're a child of God.
Right.
And he, another place, he said, by the way, walk in the light. If you walk in the light, you'll be walking as Jesus did. So the light, the love, the doing.
There it is again.
It's amazing.
It's interwoven through the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you what, as we continue through John, I'll just pick out a random verse in other places.
Yep.
Just as a thing, you will see those three concepts over and over and over. So
all the way through
those.
the three letters he wrote on the back, you know, after John the Gospel was written,
right.
And he wrote those three. But you say, but the same, Jay's, you're right about that. Over and over.
You preached that at our church?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it. I didn't preach it. I did it in a class. Yeah, I didn't preach it.
You're either going to preach it or I'm going to stay there and preach it myself.
It's
I'm just saying it's, you know.
I'm going to tell you, it
hit me. The original thought is a forgotten source, by the way.
It hit me in the book of John when I was reading those concepts, and the more I look, and when it kind of grabbed a hold of me, I was ready to run through a wall.
Well, there you go.
That's why I'm bringing it up.
All right, so we're off and running. We'll see you next time on Unashamed. So, you know, our family from the beginning, even Duck Dynasty, everything, has been about getting the Word of God to as many people as possible. And YouTube has been a big part of that, which we're grateful for. Unfortunately, we're hearing from some of you that they aren't necessarily showing you every episode. So we basically got to let them know that you love this podcast and you want to listen to it. So there's a way you can help us out as well as yourselves. If you're not subscribed, subscribe to Dad's YouTube channel on youtube.com/PhilRobertsonOnBlazeTV. It's a lot of information. youtube.com/PhilRobertsonOnBlazeTV. That's all one. You hit the notification bell icon. This tells YouTube that this is content that you want. And we want to try to give them a thumbs up on the videos as well. So do that. That keeps us being able to make sure we get everything out because we want you to keep watching and listening to our podcast, Unashamed.